Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Cyril Quinn Radio Experience on this Saturday, October 18th, 30 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour. And we'll begin where we should begin. And that's with the American League Championship Series, where the Tampa Bay Rays will try to close out the Boston Red Sox. And it's amazing, after a couple of games, how things can change. After one game, how things can change. Coming into this series, the Tampa Bay Rays were the clear underdogs, despite the fact that they had won the division. The Boston Red Sox, defending champions, everybody loved them. Everybody, including me, all the experts. After four and a half games, that course changed with Tampa Bay dominating Boston. But now, with Boston's dramatic and historical comeback, the pressure's on Tampa. Tampa Bay has to win this game tonight. You know, Boston, they're defending champions. They've won two championships in the last 4 years. If they lose, big deal. You know, they can reload, come back next year. All the pressure is on Tampa Bay Rays to come out here tonight at home, got the best pitcher on the mound to win this game. If you are a Rays fan, if you're somebody that's rooting for the Rays, your team cannot lose this game. They can't. You cannot go into a game seven with the Red Sox, who, again, have proven to be the best big-game team in baseball over the past 5 years, 12-2 in elimination games over that time period. 12-2.
And that is how we began 5 years ago, October 8th, 2008, the very first wake-up call opening montage. 5 years ago, amazing, as we entered the fifth season of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Of course, I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. I'll be taking you for this special two-hour edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. And my, have things changed. The Red Sox, the most clutch team in baseball, not this year. And certainly, our show has changed over the course of the last 4 years as we enter a fifth season. And I'll tell you a funny story about that show. That show was done inside a studio, okay, a regular radio studio, which I had to sneak into, at a previous job. And I did that entire show. The show was only 30 minutes. This is a couple things about this is how far we've come. The show was only 30 minutes long, okay, which is nothing. I couldn't imagine doing a 30-minute show unless it was on a special topic as we've done before with the paternal thing and just special U.S. Open specials, things of that magnitude. Did this entire show on a cell phone, okay? It was before Skype, well, before I had access to Skype. I'm sure Skype was around in 2008. Before Skype, before a headset, it was done entirely on a cell phone, my cell phone, at that. Holding the cell phone to my ear for 30 minutes. And we had one topic that day, and that was baseball. We did all baseball. We did the playoffs, National League, American League. It was, I believe, the Phillies and Dodgers were in the other National League Championship Series, and, of course, the Red Sox and Tampa Bay Devil Rays. And, of course, Devil Rays ended up winning. Phillies won their first World Series. Not their first World Series, but their won a championship that particular year. So we've come miles from that first show. Trust me. The sound wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be when I went back and listened to it. But, you know, that's how a show grows year by year. And each year I've tried to add something to the show. Certainly I've been happy about the progress of the show. I didn't think that I was going to do this for 5 years, as much as I love sports talk and talking sports. But, hey, we enter now a season five in where we have certainly a bevy of topics to discuss on this 8th of September 2012. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. Saturday Morning Wake Up Call poll question of the morning: who will be this year's NFL MVP? Of course, usual suspects: Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Aaron Foster, just to name a few. Or I saw one publication that had Calvin Johnson, and I love Calvin Johnson's best receiver in football, NFL MVP candidate. I don't see him as a viable NFL MVP candidate. But you know, he's going to have a big year. So that's the poll question of the day. You can always follow me on Twitter at William Gerald. Hit me up on Facebook, www.facebook.com/SurrealQuinn. Always on my website, SurrealGeraldQuinn.com, which certainly audio from this historic wake up call show will be put on the website before the weekend is out. We have a big show lined up for you. Of course, season 5 premiere, NFL kickoff. I understand, of course, Dallas won their game against the Giants. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Of course, their program on Wednesday. But this is the NFL kickoff tomorrow. NFL unofficially opens. It's full slate of games tomorrow. We have NFL picks for you. We'll talk about some more about some of the other games that intrigue me besides the picks. We'll have Mark Malusis on to talk about the Yankees, Baltimore, the AL East race. John Beckler II, the fantasy guru, joins me in a few minutes or so, around 11:30 or so. Talked about the first weekend of fantasy football. Had a lot of fun doing my drafts. The second draft was like, oh my goodness, like taking candy from a baby. So big time show for you on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, season 5, the fifth. I'm not going to say the final season like Breaking Bad, but the fifth season of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back with Saturday Morning Headlines.
If man is the father of the sun, it's the center of the earth, in the middle of the universe, then why is this verse coming 6 times rehearsed? Don't freestyle much while I write them like such words. Amongst the beings controlled by the screen, what does it all mean, all this I'm seeing? Human beings screaming vocal javelin, line of a local unraveling. My wandering got my wondering, with crisis and all this crisis, Hitler Satan never knew what nice. Check the papers, well, I've been on ice. More than your eye can see and ears can hear. Year by year, all the sense disappears. Nonsense perseveres, prayers linked with fear everywhere. Two triple M, I feel good, it might sound a little something. But damn the game, if it don't mean nothing. What is game? Who got game? Where's the game in life? Behind the game, behind the game. I got game, she got game, we got game, they got game, he got game. It might feel good, it might sound a little something. But the game, if it ain't saying nothing.
Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, the season premiere of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Surreal Quinn, taking you for the next 2 hours up until 1 o'clock as we discuss the world of sports. 347-215-6180 is the call number. Saturday Morning Headlines. The NFL's bounties against the New Orleans Saints, 4 players have been overturned by a three-member panel, unanimously overturned by the three-member panel. Anthony Hargrove, Will Smith, Scott Fujita, and, of course, Jonathan Vilma are now eligible to play in week one. In week one of this season, week one tomorrow, Fujita and Will Smith will play, which is certainly wonderful news for me as a Redskins fan. Will Smith will play. Fujita, Hargrove doesn't have a team right now. He was cut by the Packers a couple weeks ago. Vilma is out, still nursing a knee injury. Fujita, more than likely, is out. So here we go. Here we stand here. And I like this. And I'll tell you why. You know, Roger Goodell, and I've been, you know, for the last couple months, really been, you know, on Roger Goodell. Not on Roger Goodell, but just explaining just how powerful he has become in terms of what he's able to do. And it had gotten to a point where it's just too much, where, you know, a person can have too much power. And, you know, listen, I didn't like the bounties, but the bottom line is, in any workplace or any walk of life, if you are under somebody else's authority and tell you what to do, you have two choices. You can either do it to the best of your ability, or you could choose not to do it and get fired and be insubordinate. So, and you will be replaced, okay? Anybody's replaceable. especially in the NFL. So these guys were just following the orders laid down by the coaches throughout the general manager, throughout the organization. Let's just stick with the coaches, Greg Williams, Sean Payton, and what have you, mostly Greg Williams. They were just doing what they were told to do. And the reason why this decision was overturned unanimously was the fact that there's no way that you can prove intent to injure. You can say they were motivated by the money, you know, a couple thousand here, a couple thousand there, but you can't say that these guys were trying to hurt other players. NFL is a physical game. Guys get hurt just to get hurt. I mean, guys get hurt all the time or injured all the time. Careers end, it happens a lot. It's a physical game, violent sport. So that's why the appeal was overturned. I mean, this decision was overturned because the panel didn't feel like the players were in the wrong in terms of the bounties and the pay for play, so to speak, the cash bounties. That was wrong, but you cannot prove that these guys tried to hurt other players. And they, you know, the court thought, I mean, excuse me, this panel thought that Goodell had overstepped his boundaries in terms of, you know, his power, and which he probably had. He probably did. So, to me, this is good for the NFL because, listen, the big picture, the NFL is going to have to ante up with these class action lawsuits led by Jim McMahon. And Jim McMahon has a story in Sports Illustrated, which, check it out when you get a chance to, about these lawsuits and about the players that these injuries have affected, have had career-threatening, life-threatening injuries, who can't function as human beings right now, as people, because of what transpired over the course of their playing time. And the NFL is going to have to give out, it's going to have to not give out, but it's going to have to ante up like hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. There's no telling. So the NFL wanted to, you know, with these bounties and with how hard these players and coaches and the Saints got hit, you know, they wanted to flex their muscle. It was more about this. There's more to it than them flexing their muscle. It was about them showing that they care about safety. If not for this, if not for these class action lawsuits, and there are about 2,000 players still suing the NFL, 2,000 previous players who retired or have somebody or not living anymore, or have somebody representing them. If not for that, we wouldn't hear a peep about these bounties. Not a peep. This has been going on for years. Bounties against, you know, go back to the Eagles, the bounty bowl with the Eagles and Cowboys Thanksgiving back in I believe 89 when Buddy Ryan was the coach. Yeah, it's been going on forever. There's nothing. It had been nothing new. So the only reason why the NFL has made a big deal of this, and Roger Goodell, was to save face, and again, it was about image. It was about their image. But because of that, they're going to have to pay up big time. There's no two ways about it. Serena Williams continues her hot streak as she rolls, and I mean rolls, into the U.S. Open women's U.S. Open finals. She'll take on Victoria Azarenka. Azarenka is ranked number one in the world. Serena Williams right now is playing the best tennis of her career since the Serena Slam in 2002. That's how dominant she is right now. Now, when she won the Serena Slam, she had won the French Wimbledon U.S. Open and then the 2003 Australia Open over the course of a 2002, 2003, she was playing as well as any player I ever seen, to be honest with you. I'm not putting, this is right close to that level, to be, this is close to that level. 25-1 during this stretch, after the French Open loss, opened in the first round, she dominated during the summer, she won Wimbledon, and you have a major story on your hands, and I mean a major story on your hands, if Serena did not win tonight against Azarenka. She hasn't dropped a set. She's seeking her 15th Grand Slam major and adding to her legacy. I mean, it is not out of the realms of possibility that when it's all said and done, due to the lack of competition in the women's game right now, that she will go down as the greatest women's player of all time. I'm saying right now, the only two players that I've seen in my lifetime that are better, that I can make a case for, are Navratilova, Graf, and Chris Everett. Those are only three that I can make a case for better than Serena. Physically, there's no player physically as skilled as Serena has ever played a game. I mean, she changed and transcended the sport, her along with Venus to a lesser extent when they came along in the late 90s. Men's semifinals. When Federer goes out of a tournament, when you have a situation where there's no Federer goes out early, and losing the quarterfinals is early for him, losing the semifinals is early for him, and you have no Nadal, it takes a lot of juice out of any tournament, especially a Grand Slam. And on top of it, no American at the U.S. Open. I mean, these are very good players. I mean, you have Djokovic and David Ferrer and Berdych and Andy Murray. You have four of the top six players in the world. You have no real long shots in this left. I mean, these are very good players. Murray, I mean, Djokovic, but here's the problem. Only Djokovic out of this four has won a major. Djokovic is the only one out of this four that has won a major. And I swear, and to me, this is Djokovic's tournament to lose. I mean, no Federer, no Nadal. I mean, that's all you need to say. It doesn't. Andy Murray, Thomas Berdych will be an interesting match. Berdych beating Federer again was not a major surprise, considering that he beat Federer a couple of years ago at Wimbledon. He's one of those guys who just can be a matchup problem for Federer. And again, Federer still is 31 years old, still not a spring chicken anymore, but. We're certainly shocked that Federer is not playing in the U.S. Open semifinals, and I mean we're all looking forward to a Federer Djokovic final. But you know, there's a lot. Again, there's not going to be much interest for this weekend of men's tennis. Now Serena will get her due tonight, prime time. No big time college football games tonight, so Serena will have her moment in the spotlight. But as far as the men's goes, you know, I don't think anybody cares, to be honest with you. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Season 5 premiere of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call will continue. When we return, we will talk some baseball, some key games last night, some key series. But check out another classic Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call moment. I think you'll enjoy it.
I went back to Jersey last week, which was amazing. Had a great time. And got a chance to see some family that I hadn't seen in a while. Went to my uncle and aunt's house, had some good food, and coming back from a wedding rehearsal. Oh, it was about 11 o'clock, 11:30. My aunt, who's a tremendous cook, made, you know, everything. I mean, you talk about corn, chicken, you know, whatever you can think of. She made ice cream cake. She didn't make that, but there was ice cream cake there. And as usual, I probably was the last one to go to sleep. Had the whole downstairs basement to myself. You know, stuck in the family room, TV, different TV. I had it all there. And I'm telling you right now, I had the wings that I had, those wings, I don't know what she put in them. I won't even ask her the recipe because I could take a whole 10 lifetimes and not know how to, won't be able to make them nowhere near to that level that she made them, of course. But the thing about it, I had about 5 or 6 wings. And the thing about it is, I didn't go back for more. I left food on the table. Now, anybody who knows me knows that you might have a better chance of seeing a rabbit fly than seeing me leave from on the table. I go about, if you threw me into the Atlantic Ocean with a North Face on and some boots and pulled me up, I would be 170 pounds soaking wet. Okay? Again, don't ask me why. I don't know if that first plate just got to me where I couldn't move. I mean, I did have 5 or 6 wings. So I can't remember the side dish. That's how good the wings were. I couldn't even remember what else I ate besides ice cream cake. That's how good the wings were. You know, I get back late Sunday night. I mean, late Sunday night back in D.C., 2 o'clock in the morning, and that was a whole adventure in itself, a train ride, catching a cab back. I'm not even going to be that long. But despite all that, you know what was on my mind? It was barbecue wings. Middle of the week, Wednesday, kids rolling around on the ground, fighting, whatever. Boys being boys on the playground. I'm a teacher, assistant teacher. You know, went over there, broke up the fight. But you know what was on my mind? Those buffalo wings. Yesterday, I had some peach cobbler from one of the best fish places in all of D.C., some good peach cobbler, in a professional development meeting. Good, and I eating peach cobbler, eating my, you know, whatever else I had. What was on my mind? Those wings. I mean, those wings were so good. I just cannot believe that I didn't eat at least 15 or 20 of those wings. I can't believe that I just left food to be had out there. Again, I was the last one up out of anybody in that household. I could have ate everything. I mean, I could have, you know, I wouldn't have ate everything. I could have ate what I wanted to. I'm saying, hey, you know, just eat whatever. Ain't plenty of food there. You know, I wasn't no restrictions. Eat.
They were that good. Believe it or not, those wings were there. Okay. Oh, that was a March of 2009 episode about wings. They were that good. And I like they, you know, good food is good food. A great food is great food. What can I tell you? They wasn't buffalo wings. Chicken wings on my mind for a week. Those are some good wings. If you have food on, if there's a certain food, particular food that you have on your mind for a while, that's great. That's somebody's put their foot in that food. So, but we're back on a Saturday morning wake up call. Getting some baseball now. Yankees taking care of business last night against the Baltimore Orioles, a Baltimore Orioles team that has just, you know, been as resilient and been relentless throughout the course of the season. Remember, Baltimore trailed the Yankees. Yankees had a 10-game lead. You know, July 25th, had a 7-game lead on Baltimore August 17th, and Baltimore just has not went away. So Yankees, I thought that was a very important win for the Yankees last night mentally, considering what happened Thursday with that wild eighth inning where Baltimore played basically home run derby and beat the Yankees to tie them momentarily for first place in the American League. In the American League East. So Yankees have a 1-game lead. Tampa Bay's right there, just 2 games behind the Yankees. For first place in the AL East. They had a dramatic win. Ben Zobrist's 2-run home run in the bottom of the 11th inning, beating the Texas Rangers, who are going to win the AL West. I mean, Texas has basically been on cruise control for the better part of the season. 4.5 games up on Oakland, which, again, won't go away as well. But they're going to win. Texas is going to win that division. Kansas City knocking out the White Sox last night, 7-5. White Sox still remain 1 game ahead of Detroit in the AL Central race. AL wild card is all over the place. I mean, you have Oakland and Detroit. You have Oakland and Baltimore who are tied. Tampa Bay is 1 game behind. The Angels are 2 games behind, and Detroit's 3.5 games behind. So Detroit more than likely is going to have to win a division, which is very much possible, considering they're only 1 game behind. Oakland and Baltimore tied for first place. As far as the National League goes, the only race that seems to be in doubt as far as the division, and I'm not even going to say it's in doubt, because I absolutely think the Giants are going to win that division. Giants, given dealing the Dodgers a major blow last night with a 5-2 victory, Lincecum beating out Josh Beckett in a battle of, you know, seemingly has-beens as pitchers, former Cy Young winners who right now can't, or, you know, just can't get their years going. Giants 5.5 up now on the Dodgers for first place in the division. Dodgers, the only way to make the playoffs to me is going to have to be through the wild card situation, which is very much possible. There's only a game and a half out behind Atlanta and St. Louis. Pittsburgh is a game and a half out as well, so they're tied with Pittsburgh for a race for the wild card. Again, those divisions in the NL are over. I mean, Nationals are going to make the playoffs. Cincinnati has ran and hid from everybody else. So National League, it's all about the wild card, and the Giants are going to win that division. Giants are going to be a tough out in the playoffs. Giants are going to be a very tough out, tough team to deal with in the playoffs. You know, you're talking about having Lincecum as your fourth starter. That's how deep their pitching is. And, you know, when Melky Cabrera went down, everybody was like, oh, Melky Cabrera. Oh. As, you know, like he's, you know, Barry Bonds or somebody. Melky Cabrera is a nice player who was having the year of his life, and we know why he was having the year of his life. But the Giants aren't built by offense. They're not built that way. They're built on pitching. Now, if you take away a Matt Cain or you take away a Mason Bumgarner, then I'll say, oh, they're in trouble. Or you take somebody out that bullpen, that's a whole other story. They're built with their pitching, period. When you can throw Cain, Bumgarner, Vogelsong, and Lincecum as your fourth starter, and then Zito as your fifth starter, I mean, that is as deep. That's the best to me. And I have to take the Nationals, but I have to take Stroudsburg out of mix. That's the best pitching staff in the National League, as far as starting pitching staff in the National League, to me, that the Giants have. And the Giants are going to win that division. Again, they're going to be extremely tough out in the playoffs. Stroudsburg struggles last night, gives up five runs in three innings in his second-to-last start. They take him out of the three innings. Just why even start him on Wednesday? If you don't take him out of the three innings because he gave up five runs, he didn't have his best stuff, don't. Just shut him down. Just shut him down. I don't understand that. I don't understand it now, taking him out of the three innings when you're going to shut him down anyway. Just shut him down now. And just get, I mean, he's had almost 160 innings. This whole magic number that the Nationals have. Nationals look bad because they look even worse now because of what Atlanta has done with their star pitcher, the Medlin. If you don't know Medlin, Chris Medlin was pushed back. His season, the start of his season was pushed back to June. He came out of the bullpen to get work. And now Medlin is finding boys. If the Braves make the playoffs, which they have an excellent chance, which I think they will, the Braves, he will be there for the duration of the playoffs, however far the Braves go. And now, you know, people are saying, well, why couldn't the Nationals do that with Stroudsburg? Well, the one, you know, pushback you can have on that is Stroudsburg maybe not conditioned to come out of the bullpen, but still, it wasn't even nobody. They could have, like, the Nationals could have handled this much differently than what they're handling, and they're going to get ripped. Only way they can win is by winning a championship. And the worst thing that could happen is if the Braves go out there and win a championship, which is now the realm of possibility. I mean, the Braves are a very good team. Braves go out there and win the World Series. I mean, my goodness, that would be ugly for the Nationals. And they're going to get killed in public. So you have the Yankees, Baltimore, keep your eye on this weekend. No David Price for Tampa, as now we are joined by John Beckler, fantasy expert. John, thank you. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well, very well. I appreciate you inviting me on the show this morning, and I'm ready. I'm all ready for the NFL to start tomorrow. Can't wait.
Can't wait. No question about it. John, give me three sleepers for this weekend, guys who might go under the radar, but who do you expect to do some nice things?
Well, sleepers for this weekend, one I would throw out there is possibly Danny Amendola in St. Louis. He's a receiver with the Rams, and he's going up against the Detroit Lions secondary that didn't play extraordinarily well last year. And he's really been a guy that hasn't been talked about much at all this offseason and leading up to the fantasy draft that we all just got done partaking in last weekend. He's a guy that could come out and have a fairly solid game for you if you're looking for someone to replace an injured player or to plug in at a flex play. He's a guy that could possibly come out and do well for you. Going down the list, Ryan Williams in Arizona is not necessarily a huge sleeper at this point because his name's been, you know, thrown out there many, many times. But he is going to be getting a lot more work now that Beanie Wells is out, not necessarily out, but questionable in their upcoming game with Seattle. He's got a hamstring problem, so it looks like Williams is going to get more carries this weekend than he had previously expected. So that's another player that could help you out. And I would also say probably Pierre Garçon is another guy who's he's been talked about. He's not necessarily, you know, a sleeper at this point. There's so many guys out there that have been talked about over and over again. But Garçon is a guy that could have a lot of success this weekend going against New Orleans, who doesn't play the pass very well. They've given up quite a few passing yards over the past couple of years. And I just feel that that game is going to be a shootout, Washington and New Orleans. And he's got a good chance to get in the end zone, if not once, maybe twice. Garçon is a guy that was targeted heavily in the preseason by RG3. And he, for whatever reason, he's kind of locked onto him as his main target. And he seems to be getting a lot of looks, and he's doing the most with those looks. So I feel like he's going to get in the end zone if once, if not twice this weekend.
Now, it seems like that Lynch of Seattle will be out on Monday night. How much do you like Turbin?
I like Robert Turbin a lot. He's a player that I watched quite a bit of in the preseason, and he did the most with the carries that he got. He is a player that is much like Trent Richardson in Cleveland. If you look at those two players, they're very similar in size, talent, and ability on the field. So those basically that's what you're getting with Turbin. You're getting you know, Trent Richardson without the Alabama uniform and without the Alabama hype. You know, he came out of Utah State where he put up great numbers. He had an injury there that kind of you know, pushed him down a little bit in the draft board. But he's a very capable back, and I would have no issues starting him. If Lynch is one of your starting running backs and you need to play Turbin as his backup, you should have no issues there. You know, Seattle is matched up with Arizona this weekend, and Arizona's played the Seattle run game pretty well over the past couple of years. I think last year they averaged about 80 yards. They gave up about 80 yards to Seattle on the ground. But I suspect that this year is going to be a little different. With the mobility of Russell Wilson under center, you know, that tends to open up running lanes for your running backs. When you have a mobile quarterback who can get out on the edge in the play action, or even when you have a design rollout for him, that opens up lanes inherently in the middle of the field for your running back. So I tend to think that Turbin, if he gets to go, will be a very good play for you this weekend. Also Lynch. If Lynch, for whatever reason, does start the game and plays, I think both of those guys are going to have a quality matchup against Arizona.
We're joined now, of course, by John Beckler II, who, again, knows fantasy football upside down, inside out. Sticking with that theme, a player of sleepers, with there are a lot of players who are coming off injuries from last season. How much of these play backups do you trust? As far, and I'm talking like, you know, you just mentioned Turbin. I just mentioned Turbin, like a guy like Toby Gebhardt or Rashad Jennings. Who, I mean, I know Jones Jr. will play, but it'll be, you know, sparingly. So do you trust these guys to get not so much produce on the level that their starters produce at, but to get the kind of reps, to get the kind of reps that will give them an opportunity to pick up some points?
I do in some cases, and it's important to look at, you know, the coaching staff and how much trust they have in a player to give them the reps that the starter normally gets. So, you know, for instance, we saw on Wednesday night, you know, David Wilson had a couple of nice looks in that game, and then he had the unfortunate fumble where, you know, he didn't see action the rest of the game after that.
Right. Yep.
And then moving forward, you're going to have to say to yourself, okay, well, we need to see how Tom Coughlin and the coaching staff are going to react to this player's fumbling issues, because he did come out of college with, you know, a fumbling issue, you know, attached to him. So that's something that kind of is going to linger with you for a while. You know, Tiki Barber used to have the same issue. You know,
no
he was the guy that he had a that fumbling stigma, and he kind of shored it up, and, you know, through the later part of his career, he kind of was a lesser known for his fumbling. But, you know, guys like Toby Gerhart behind Adrian Peterson in Minnesota had the trust of their coaching staff. He played down the stretch last year in about five, he started four or five games for them down the stretch, and he performed very well. So going into this season, you know, he's got the trust of that coaching staff. If Peterson doesn't go, they're not necessarily going to change the game plan tremendously, you know, because he's behind center, behind quarterback in the backfield. You know, they might change some of the play calls. They could call plays differently for him than they would for Peterson because of Peterson's special ability. You know, there are certain things that he can do that, you know, nobody else can. But they're going to give him a good amount of reps. So I trust Toby Gerhart. You know, I trust Robert Turbin. You know, in a situation in Cleveland where we have Trent Richardson, who is going to be similar to Maurice Jones-Drew this weekend, I believe. They're both going to get about, you know, maybe 10 to 15 looks. They might get, you know, 8 to 12 touches of the ball. You know, that brings into play Montario Hardesty for Cleveland as the number two back. Well, you know, he's had his issues as well, whether it be injury or holding onto the ball. You know, that's a guy that I don't necessarily trust as a fantasy start. And I don't necessarily see the coaches trusting him either. I think he's going to end up splitting time with Brandon Jackson, who they have in the backfield as well. So I think that's a situation where you have to look at it and say, okay, I don't see him putting up, you know, valuable, the numbers aren't going to be as valuable as a guy like Gerhart or the guy like Turbin. You know, so you have to kind of take that into consideration. And you mentioned Rashad Jennings. He's a guy that I think ran very well in the preseason, and I wouldn't have any issues starting him. You know, the only issues that you have there are, you know, we don't know. There's only, you know, 53 players and, you know, maybe 20 coaches that know the Jacksonville locker room, how many touches are in the game plan for each guy. You know, so we're speculating and we're saying to ourselves, okay, well, it would not be in their best interest to have Maurice Jones-Drew come off of, you know, missing the entire preseason and playing this game and taking, you know, 20 to 30 reps in the backfield. You know, that's a surefire way to get a guy hurt. He's not in game shape, and they shouldn't be using him in the game. But I still think that he and Richardson are probably going to get about 10 or 12 touches. So that leaves Jennings with, you know, maybe about 15 to 20 touches, whether it be in the running or passing game, and I think he'll do the most with those. Now, he has a relatively difficult matchup with Minnesota. You know, Minnesota's not the best in pass defense, but they do play the run well, and they've got a very good defensive line. So, you know, Jennings and Drew have a difficult matchup. So, you know, I would like a guy like Turbin over Rashard Jennings. I would like, you know, Gerhart over Jennings. But, again, if you're stuck between a decision of, you know, I have to start either Jones or Drew or Jennings, you definitely want to go with Jennings.
Two last one for me, John. Now, this is always the fantasy player's dilemma. You see a guy has a big game, and then you, out of nowhere, that you didn't expect it, and then you wonder whether or not to stick with that guy. Of course, you're looking at next week's matchups, the defenses, and what have you. But it's very tricky, and the reason why I bring this up is what transpired on Wednesday night with Ogletree, with the touchdown catches. You know, feeling, you know, Miles Austin, you know, I know Austin had a touchdown catch, but, you know, Miles Austin is not 100% right now, so he got more, he was targeted more, waiting still, banged up, didn't look nowhere near, like himself, of course, and to no surprise. Do you see Ogletree being a more integral part of the Dallas offense, or do you see this as, hey, this was a situation where we had some guys banged up, when they get their sea legs, they're gonna be getting the majority of the targets?
I think the latter. You know, he made the most of his opportunity. He played a great game on Wednesday night. And, you know, when they needed him, you know, there's that saying in football, next man up. You know, the guy in front of you goes down, you need to step up and do the best you can for your team. And that's what Ogletree did. He played a very good game. And I think once these guys come back healthy, you know, you mentioned Miles Austin, once he comes back full strength and once Witten comes back full strength, you know, his role in the offense is going to be diminished. It's not to say that he won't have value through the rest of the season because, you know, the guy obviously showed he has talent and he showed that he can perform under pressure. You know, that was a big stage in the opening game of the season, and it was on national television and everybody was watching it. He stepped up and made the plays. So he certainly has the ability to put in good games here and there. I just think as the season progresses, you know, his targets are going to decrease and it's going to be more difficult for him to, you know, put up a two-touchdown game with, you know, over 100 yards passing, over 150 yards receiving, rather. So I think he's probably more or less, you know, a guy that could help your team in the short term. In the long term, I think that, you know, he's probably not going to be the best bet for you.
And as far as quarterbacks goes, one, give me your thoughts on Russell Wilson. And two, if I need a quarterback, and, you know, a lot of people, I saw a lot of drafts where people de-emphasized the quarterback once they were not able to get one of the big quarterbacks in the first round, in the first couple rounds or so. So if I need, you know, if I need a quarterback, who could I pick up this week? And what are your thoughts again? What are your thoughts on Russell Wilson?
Well, I'll go with Russell Wilson first. I love Russell Wilson's game. I think he plays the game. It's great fun to watch play the game of football. You know, he came in and he took his opportunities and he made the most of them. I mean, he really performed well in the preseason. He made some great throws. He made some great decisions, and when you watch that game, if you took, you know, the name off the back of the jersey and you just watched the player play, you would never know that he was, you know, a rookie coming into the NFL, because he certainly didn't look like a rookie. Very rarely did he make a rookie mistake. He made better decisions than a lot of the starting veteran quarterbacks that are in the league today. So I really like his prospects in the NFL. He's going to have bumps along the way, you know, just like all rookies do. Once the teams get some more game film on him, and come up with some schemes to defend against him a little well, it'll be incumbent upon him to adjust his game. You know, right now he's out ahead of the defenses because they don't necessarily know what to expect. So once the defenses adjust to him, it's going to be back on him to make adjustments to them, you know, and step his game up. So I think he'll have some bumps along the way, just like Luck will and just like RG3 will. But I think all three of those players, you know, throughout the course of the year and throughout the course of their career are going to have success in the league. Now, to your second question, if you need a quarterback this week and you need to go on the waiver wire and pick one up, you know, if a guy like Russell Wilson is on your waiver wire, your free agent market, and certainly he's somebody you want to pick up. I suspect that based on his, you know, preseason performance and the notoriety he got through week three of the preseason, he's probably drafted in most of your leagues. There are guys out there that you can play. You know, Alex Smith is a guy who doesn't necessarily always get drafted. He would be a good play this week against Green Bay. Now, Green Bay didn't play the best pass defense last year, and he certainly got some weapons there. So he could put up a quality start for you if your quarterback is injured or if you are looking for a better matchup than what you currently have. There's also the quarterback in Jacksonville. You have Gabbert there. Now, Gabbert is taking a lot of heat through last year's rookie season about his inability to stand up against pressure in the pocket. And that's certainly something you could see on film. He did have issues stepping into throws and standing up in the face of pressure. I saw a little less of that this preseason. And he's got a few more weapons around him now to help him out there in Jacksonville. And I think that was a lot of his problem last year, was he didn't have a whole lot of help there. And it's tough to, you know, step into some of those throws if a guy is not in the right place on the field, or if you don't have that trust or relationship with a certain receiver. So I think with Blackman there and with Robinson, you know, those are two guys that are really going to be able to help him out. And I think he'll have, you know, some success this game coming up against Minnesota because, again, like I said, they don't defend the pass very well. Now, you know, there's other players out there that you can pick up. I would stay away from the Jets quarterbacks. I would stay away from you know, those situations, I definitely wouldn't play them. Jake Locker, you might be able to get in Tennessee. He's somebody who might be able to help you out, you know, depending on whether or not he was drafted in your league. He's going up against New England. New England was terrible against the pass last year, so he's going to have a good matchup. So there's always guys out there on the free agent market or the waiver wire that can help you out. You just have to look at the matchup and, you know, make sure that they're going to get themselves or the coaches are going to get themselves into a good position for success, you know.
John, as always, you do a wonderful job, and we look forward to having you on throughout the course of the season. And I'm certainly looking forward to the opening slate of games on week one of the NFL season. Certainly we'll get back to you.
Okay, thanks so much for inviting me on. I really appreciate it, and I really enjoy coming out with you. Thanks again.
And one last thing, John, I just thought about this. Can you give the audience where your website and some of your information is available? I would like to pass along that information.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I can be found on Twitter at @NFLDM_John. And my columns can be found on NFL Draft Monsters. scouting.com, and it's a scouting website, and the site does scouting of collegiate football players for the NFL draft and for NFL franchises, and they write up a ton of great prospect previews on certain players coming out and certain teams in the collegiate game. So if you're a fan of college football and you're a fan of the NFL draft, it's definitely a great site to visit.
So thank you for that piece of information, John, and we will certainly look forward to having you on throughout the course of the season.
Okay, great to be on, and have a great weekend.
You too. That is, of course, John Beckler II giving you a bevy of fantasy information. Yeah, it's, you know, the tricky thing, again, like Ogletree, he'll go out and have a three-touchdown game, and then, you know, you won't hear from him for 4 weeks. So I'm very suspect on guys who have one good game. You normally want to see it for a couple games before you try to take a risk on picking them up. And you want to, again, understand the situation. Witten and Miles Austin are going to get healthier as the course of the season goes along. They're going to get more practice reps. So, you know, that's a guy who, again, Ogletree might not hear from him for the next 4 or 5 weeks. This just in, Steven Strasburg has been shut down for the season and makes by the Nationals. And, you know, I mentioned it earlier in the program, like, you pull him out after three innings. You gave up 5 runs. Pull him out after three innings. Why pitch him Wednesday? I mean, what, you know, it makes no sense. So the Nationals do the right thing, shut him down for the season. But that will certainly not end the questions on why you're shutting him down and, you know, giving up a possibility of winning a championship. Also, there was some talk that Strasburg was distracted, said, you know, there was some, you know, he said he couldn't sleep the night before his start, you know, thinking about letting the team down because he's going to get shut down. This thing is an ugly situation for the Nats. There's no way to describe it. I understand the whole, they're protecting him and that, you know, trying to protect their investment, but they're going to take a lot of heat for this. And again, the Braves go out there and do have a great postseason one run and possibly win a championship, they're going to look crazy. I mean, you just never know. You never know. I think the Nationals, from top to bottom, are the most complete team in baseball. I really do. I mean, the lineup with the starting pitching, with their bullpen, I think they're top. And does that mean they're going to win? Does that mean if Strasburg were pitching, would they guarantee the championship? No. We know baseball, right? We know how baseball currently, where baseball is currently at as far as postseason goes. It's a crapshoot. You know, you get a hot pitcher, you get a couple guys in your lineup that get some clutch hits, and there you go. You get a St. Louis, you know, Albert Pujols, David Freese gets hot. You get, you know, Chris Carpenter outpitches Holiday. Those type of things happen, and you win a championship. But, I mean, the Nationals, again, from top to bottom, with what they, you know, Gio Gonzalez has been tremendous throughout the course of the season. Gio Gonzalez has a chance to win 20 games. And don't put too much stock in him. Strasburg struggling down the stretch in his last couple of starts. Listen, pitchers struggle. I mean, Justin Verlander went through a stretch this season when he struggled. It happens. It's baseball. Pitcher struggles, hitter struggle. So, you know, I wouldn't put anything into that. But this is a tricky situation for the Washington Nationals. When we return, we'll talk some Redskin football from all my Redskin Nation as they go into a hornet's nest. New Orleans Superdome tomorrow. Do they have a chance? I think they do. But we're going to see what happens with that. We'll talk Redskin report. We'll also have NFL picks as well. Still a lot to do on this busy edition of the Season 5 premiere of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Mark Malusis is coming up in the 12 o'clock hour. We'll be right back.
Oh,
wake up call 347-215-6180 is your call number on this 8th of September 2012 season 5 premiere. I had to play that now because I guarantee you they will not be playing that tomorrow down in New Orleans. You might hear some, you know, when the Saints go marching in. The Redskins enter this regular season, start this regular season, and probably right now the toughest environment in professional football as far as places to play, toughest places to play. New Orleans last year, to give you a sense of how dominant they were at home, New Orleans last year averaged 41 points a game at home. They scored 30, 40, 62, 27, 49, 31, 45, 45, and you know, 30 and 45 and 32 in those two playoff games that they had against the Lions and the 49ers. I mean, to give you a sense of how great the New Orleans Saints offense is, they put 32 on the board and over 500 yards of offense on San Francisco, a San Francisco team that had at least three all pros on that defense, on that defense, two all pros on that defense, and to me was the best defense in the league last year. Put 32 on them with turnovers, I might add. So to me, the Redskins are going to have to shorten this game, cut the possessions, keep Drew Brees off the field. There's no way the Redskins can stop the New Orleans Saints offense. Nobody can stop the New Orleans Saints offense. And the Redskins already come in to the game banged up in the secondary. No Brandon Merriweather. Tanar Jackson, of course, suspended with the drug substance abuse thing, the substance abuse policy he violated. So DeJuan Gomes and Madu Williams will start in the secondary, along with, of course, Josh Wilson, and D'Angelo Hall. So it's going to be all about the pressure up front. It's going to be about Ryan Kerrigan. Can Kerrigan and Arakpo get to Drew Brees? If Kerrigan or Arakpo cannot get to Drew Brees, it's going to be a long afternoon down in the Big Easy. Pure and simple. Offensively, Lichtensteiger will be back for the Redskins. Redskins, for the most part, have their offensive line intact, though Lichtensteiger could share playing time with Maurice Hurt. Running back, of course, this is the thing that kind of annoys me about the Redskins, and about Shanahan sometimes, have not announced a starter as if this great mystery is just, I don't know, there's no competitive advantage if you don't announce it, if you wait till the last minute to announce a starter. The Saints are going to prepare for all those guys equally. I mean, I wouldn't give more time to one or the other. I expect to see a lot of Alfred Morris and Evan Royster. And I think Helu probably will get the least amount of time, unless he goes out there and gets a 80-yard run on his first carry or something like that. But I expect to see more. I expect that Alfred Morris will get the majority of the carries, to be honest with you. If you made me guess it. But, I mean, who knows? The Redskins are going to run those three backs. Again, the Redskins are going to have to shorten this game. They're going to have to. They're going to have to play field. They're going to have to be great on third down. You can't have three and outs against that team. Your defense, that place is as loud. It's the loudest dome in football. Clearly, it is the loudest dome, and out of all the domes, it holds the most people in. It's the loudest dome in all of football. Again, Saints, when they play at home, have been unbeatable in that building. I don't expect that the suspensions or the lifting of suspensions has any impact on this game whatsoever. None. I mean, first of all, I mean, Will Smith will play. He's a very good player. And so I shouldn't say have any. I'm talking from an emotional standpoint. I mean, you're talking about your home season opener. If you can't get jacked up for that, then there's something wrong with you. I don't see this raising the Saints' intensity level that much more. I mean, it's their home opener, season start. Their season opener and their home opener. All right, they're gonna be ready to play. I don't think the Redskins will embarrass themselves tomorrow, to be honest with you, because to be truthful with you, the Saints defense is a sieve. Okay, the Saints defense, Saints are going to be in a lot of games. I mean, I talked about it with Robert Sapp on the Cyril Quinn review on Tuesday when we were previewing the NFL season. The Saints, you're going to see a lot of 45 to 38, 42 to 36 type games for the Saints all season long. They're going to be throwing the ball a lot. Because their defense is going to give up a ton of points and a ton of yards. It is horrible. Their secondary is very suspect. They don't have a pass rush. So the Redskins should be able to move the ball against the Saints. The question is, do they get field goals or do they get touchdowns? Do they convert third and four or do they, punt the football? Those will be the deciding factors of the game. I don't like giving predictions on Redskins game. I think the Redskins are in for a uphill battle tomorrow afternoon. But we will see what happens. One last note, one quick note, Redskin note, as far as some news. They're going to speak to Chris Cooley next week. I don't know why. Like, is he coming back to the team? Are they going to talk about a deal that, certainly will pay him less than what he was going to make? I don't get it. I don't get the point of talking to Chris Cooley. I think you cut him, you move on, and go about your business. I don't know why. I don't think Chris Cooley adds anything to this team at this point in his career. You have Fred Davis. You have Miles Paul. That is a good tight end combination as far as I'm concerned. Fred Davis has, Pro Bowl caliber talent if he with his head on right, keeps his head on straight. Miles Paul is an excellent number two tight end to have on your team. It could start for some teams, frankly. So I don't know why they're even entertaining talking to Chris Cooley. Are they trying to mend fences? I don't get it. Players get cut all the time in the NFL. Chris Cooley was not the first player to get cut in NFL history. He certainly won't be the last. I mean, they get older, they get injured. They do stupid stuff off the field. For a variety of reasons, players get cut. But the Redskins feel like they need to speak to Chris Cooley, and so be it. Coming up on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call as we enter hour number two, we will talk some college football. I have a couple of bones to pick. I have a bone to pick with a couple of college football programs. And also Art Modell, who passed away this weekend, his influence on the NFL. NFL picks are coming up as well, so still a busy last hour of the season 5 premiere of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. We'll be right back.
Nobody crying.
Top of the hour, 12 o'clock on this special edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, Cyril Quinn, Season 5 premiere of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call as we enter not only a NFL season, but again, our fifth season of this show, October 8th, 2008 was the very first show. Played the opening. If you missed the opening, certainly I will have that opening on SurrealGeraldQuinn.com before the weekend is out. Again, the show has come so far. I mean, I remember when I was doing shows with no phone calls. I mean, you didn't take phone calls. First of all, I didn't have a laptop computer. Okay, I didn't have a laptop. I used to do shows where I would just call in off my cell phone and eventually got some headphones, and we would do the show with no interaction whatsoever. Luckily, I came to my senses in 2010. We began with phone calls. We began with phone calls and interacting with the audience, and certainly it's been a fun ride, and we enter a fifth year of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We hope and we know that the show will grow and keep getting better week by week and show by show. Program note for the NFL show, which will be in its third season, and that will start on Tuesday, September 11th, which, ironic, but wasn't done by design due to scheduling. So next Tuesday, September 11th, will be the season premiere of season three of the NFL show, which we always have fun with. I might do a wrap up show tomorrow. But I'll be so entrenched with the fantasy and also with just the overall info. I don't know. I might do it. I'll think about it. More than likely, I'm not, because I just want to put everything into that NFL show. But, who knows? I might sneak in an NFL wrap-up show for you. So stay tuned for that. But next Tuesday, the NFL show will premiere at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll do an hour. We'll break down all the games. We'll have some new things, top five quarterbacks. We'll take that from Facebook to the NFL show, talk about top five quarterbacks. So we'll explain what it takes to be a top five quarterback, in my opinion, and how I gauge the top five quarterbacks of the week. So we'll talk about that, have some fun with that. But real quick, I have a little bone pick with a couple of college football teams. FCS teams in college football are like JV, okay? They're like JV. They're like the JV teams of college football. They're teams like Savannah State that play the major programs to take a paycheck. They're pure and simple, plain and simple. They have no chance, zero chance of winning the games. The big schools are looking to fill their schedule I mean, every week a big-time school is not going to be playing a top-ranked team, so they need games to fill their schedule. This week you have five FCS teams playing ranked opponents, okay? And before I further get into it, this is a bad week for college football. I understand that Missouri and Texas A&M are debuting in the SEC, and Texas A&M and Florida, which should be a very good game. Florida is not what it once was, and Texas A&M is pretty good. But no ranked teams are playing each other this week in college football. So it's a quiet week before next week's showdown with Alabama and Arkansas, which we'll certainly talk about next week. But Savannah State, now I have not seen a line on this game in the last day or so. I saw a line on it Thursday night, that had Savannah State as 70-point underdogs to Florida State. And normally, with you, if you're a better, you would normally run at that. It's like, what? 70? You give me, really? You're going to give me 70 points? You're going to give me 70 points. A better would normally go like, you got to be, are you kidding me? But then when you go back and look at the fact that Savannah State lost to Oklahoma State last week 84-0, you say, I might need 80 points. I mean, and I think Florida State is better than Oklahoma State, though Florida State did lose Brandon Jenkins, the great pass rushing defensive end, but that won't start. That won't hurt their offense. I mean, it's ridiculous for these teams to be playing. First of all, you're putting your own, you're putting, and all jokes aside, you're putting the health of your players at risk. I mean, when you look at a Florida State versus a Savannah State, when you look at those teams and the difference in physicality, it's not even close. The Florida State guys and those guys that play for those major programs are just bigger, stronger, and faster. So don't blame the big schools. Blame the FCS schools for taking the paychecks, for taking the money. Blame them. If they get beat 90-0, don't blame on Nebraska. Don't blame on Florida State. Don't blame on USC. Blame the school that's playing them. Because those schools, you know, USC, Florida State of the world, they have to fill their schedule somehow. And again, every game can't be against a ranked or a top ranked or a top opponent. Especially if you're playing in the SEC. You're already going good enough. Great games, tough games playing in that conference. So, you know, especially if you're playing in a conference that's very difficult. SEC, Big Ten, Big 12 to a lesser extent. You know, Savannah State is going to get, I mean, I don't know what number I would put on that game. They're going to get destroyed. They're going to get destroyed. So just a minor bone that I have to pick with some of these smaller schools, with some of these FCS schools, it just makes no sense. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we'll look back at the legendary career of the late Art Modell. Mark Malusis is still on the way with some baseball as well. And also, we might get into a little Jets-Giants. And NFL picks, that's all still coming up on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. After the 12 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. Special 2-hour edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, of course, season 5. season 5 premiere show, NFL kickoff weekend. You've already seen the Dallas Cowboys take out the Giants. Listen, that was a bigger game for Dallas than it was the Giants. Eventually, a Super Bowl team, a defending Super Bowl team, was going to lose. We talked about how the Super Bowl team, a team coming off the Super Bowl, had never lost that opening game. It was eventually going to happen. Giants were flat. I did not like the ceremony at the beginning when they bring out all four of their Super Bowl trophies. I think it's Sims, Lawrence, Taylor, Strahan were up there. I didn't like that at all. I thought, you know, that really is just shoving it in the face of your opponent you're about to play. And also, more importantly, it just, you know, it sucks the life out of the home team. They're still in celebratory mode. You know, NFL is the definition of, you know, of a now league. It's all about the here and now. It's not about what you did last season and preseason. It's about what you do right now. And I thought that was not very smart on the Giants to have that kind of ceremony right before the game. All right, now listen, you know, a ring ceremony, especially football, NBA is completely different. Ring ceremony before the game is totally different because you have 82 games. So the meaning of one game does not carry the same, nowhere near the weight of an NFL game. Only 16 NFL regular season games. You know, you only get 8 home games. So I thought, did that cause them to lose the game? No. Giants were flat. Romo played great. I thought the key part of the game, to me, that turned the whole game around was when the Giants got the turnover off the Boley interception and were only able to convert that into a field goal. And the Cowboys defense did a great job of holding the Giants to a field goal when the Giants got inside the Cowboys 10-yard line. So I thought that was, to me, the turning point of that particular game. Cowboys played well. I mean, they played well. Eli wasn't as sharp as he normally is. They held the Giants down. Again, to me, it was more about the Giants than what the Cowboys did. We all know Cowboys, and Cowboy fans know this better than me. You know, they get off to fast starts at times. It's all about December for Cowboys. I mean, it's about late November, December, or December, January, in terms of what they're going to do. But that was a big-time win for the Cowboys. Listen, anytime, and I believe they're on the road next week against Seattle, I believe. So they have an opportunity to start the season off 2-0 on the road and have it be against a divisional rival and also another NFC opponent. So they have a chance to start their season off, get a great jump start on this 2012 season. Art Modell, of course, passed away this week at the age of 87, natural causes. Modell had owned, you know, the Browns, Ravens, those franchises for 43 years up until Steve Buscemi took over a few years ago. And listen, the fact is, it's unfortunate that he passes away before he could get elected to the Hall of Fame. Because I guarantee you, when the next Hall of Fame ballot comes around, that he's probably going to get in. The idea that he was not elected to the Hall of Fame because of the move he made going from Cleveland to Baltimore in 96 is a disgrace to me. It's a disgrace. The man owns the team. As a businessman, he has the right to do whatever he wants with that team. He moved that team to Baltimore, and all he did was help lead them to a Super Bowl. That's all they did. And Baltimore has been one of the top 5 franchises over the past decade. Easily. Steve Buscemi. That doesn't happen without Modell. I mean, Modell, if there is a Mount Rushmore of NFL figures, of legendary figures, and you could look at Paul Brown, Pete Rozelle, Vince Lombardi. Art Modell is on that list. There's no two ways about it. And for his influence on what the league is, I mean, he had an impact on the NFL merger. He had, you know, he was influential in terms of the Monday Night Football thing with ABC back in 1970. For him not to be in the Hall of Fame is just a joke. It's a joke. Man, this is not, I'm not even a Ravens fan. I wasn't a Browns fan. I'm just speaking from an objective view that this man should be in the Hall of Fame. No question. It's not even a discussion. You know, now, as a Cleveland Brown fan, I mean, do you have a right to boo and not forgive him for what he did? Fine. Don't. That's your opinion. That is your opinion. I'm not a Cleveland Brown fan, so I can't relate to that. But again, he at that time owned the team. As the owner of the team, he has a right to do whatever he wants to the team. He has a right to. When he was with Cleveland, it's not like he wasn't attempting to put a quality product on the field. That's what would piss you off if you're a fan. You know, you get a guy like Donald Sterling, those kind of owners, I'm thinking of the George Shinn when he owned the Hornets. Those are owners that drive you that would drive you to drink. Again, one of the legendary figures in NFL history, one of the great owners in pro sports history, as far as I'm concerned. Again, you cannot minimize the impact that he had on the NFL. There's no two ways about it. And I'll say it again. He should be in the Hall of Fame without question. Is your call number. When we return, we will have NFL picks for a week one in the league where no contract is guaranteed. Contract is guaranteed. The 93rd season of NFL football is upon us. Four games this week. Four very good games, I might say. We begin with the Sunday night game. Pittsburgh traveling to Invesco Field to take on Peyton and company. Broncos, Steelers, the line, Denver by a point and a half, which is basically a pick-em. I don't understand why they didn't make this game a pick-em. This is a very even matchup. Very much an even matchup, considering that Denver's at home. Pittsburgh probably a little bit better team, but Denver at home, opening weekend. Peyton Manning's debut. And to me, I'm looking at this game. It's a game of question marks. What is Peyton Manning going to look like? He hasn't played, didn't play a full year, four neck surgeries. Maybe lost a bit off the fastball. He claims that it doesn't matter. He wasn't, his arm strength doesn't count. Not doesn't count, but, you know, he's not about arm strength. It's about his mind and his pinpoint accuracy. And two, you know, you can, I can understand him coming from that perspective. I mean, what is he going to say? What is he going to say? I can't play anymore. I should retire. But again, a game of question marks. First of all, no Ryan Clark in this game. Remember, Ryan Clark has a condition that does not allow him to play in the high altitude of Denver. Didn't play in the playoff game. Didn't play in the playoff game with Denver, won that wild overtime game with Tebow and Demaryius Thomas touchdown connection. So that is a big time blow. Ryan Clark is one of the most underrated players in the league. Not just underrated defensively, but just one of the most underrated players in general in the league, period. That will certainly hurt a already, to me, suspect Pittsburgh secondary. How good is Pittsburgh's defense? Had major question marks about it over the course of during the preseason and going to the offseason. I don't know how good their defense is. James Harrison's not getting any younger. He could be out. I mean, he's probably doubtful to play. Troy Polamalu getting a little older. Is he still the same Troy Polamalu who was the defensive player of the year a couple years back? Not sure. One thing I do know about Pittsburgh is they have a quarterback. And they have some very good receivers. Mike Wallace, Antonio Brown, Emmanuel Sanders, Heath Miller, a revamped offensive line led by arguably the best center in football in Pouncey. Pittsburgh, I think, is going to put up a lot of points this season. I think this game is going to be a shootout. I really do. I think that both these defenses are suspect. Denver's defense is not the greatest, to say the least, as well. I know Von Miller has a chance to be a star, but their defense, you know, Peyton is going to have to put up some points with that defense, especially against the run. Question marks in terms of Isaac Redman, you know, you're going to see a lot of Jonathan Dwyer in this game. Mendenhall probably won't play. But to me, the difference in this game to me is I like the home field advantage of Denver, the energy from that crowd, giving them a slight edge. And I think they take out Pittsburgh 31-28. Manning makes enough plays. Again, a lot of points will be put on the board in this game. I don't like either one of these defenses at all. I like Pittsburgh's a little bit better, but I think Peyton Manning will. I think Decker, Demaryius Thomas, some of those weapons that he has, will be able to do some things against that Pittsburgh secondary. So game number one, I'm taking Pittsburgh. I'm taking Denver with the points to cover and to win outright, win 31-28. Game number two, my upset special of the week: Atlanta 3-point favorites against Kansas City. Arrowhead Stadium used to be one of the toughest places to play in the NFL. I still think it's a tough place to play. Remember, week one of the NFL season is always a wild and crazy week. Coming off the preseason, guys are not in tip-top condition, still trying to get their sea legs. You know, you see a lot of weird things happen in the first week of the NFL season. Everybody loves Atlanta's offense. Julio Jones, Roddy White, Michael Turner, Tarquez Rogers, Matt Ryan, Tony Gonzalez to a lesser extent, but still, he's still a very good tight end. Everybody loves that offense, but nobody is talking about their defense. That defense is not very good. They have pass rushing issues as far as I'm concerned. Secondary should be improved with Asante Samuel, but he is the definition of a gambler. It's either feast or famine with him. He can return an 80-yard touchdown or he can give up an 80-yard touchdown. I like Kansas City's rushing attack. I like the combination of Jamal Charles returning with Peyton Hillis. I like the receivers, Dwayne Bowe and Baldwin. Castle, we know he's not elite, but he's not bad. He can make some plays. I think Kansas City pulls out the upset here. I know it's a reach, but I think Atlanta, all these expectations on the road in a historically tough place to play, I think Kansas City, and Kansas City has some defense. Kansas City can play defense. Cornell, that's one thing he can do, is coach defense. I know they have a couple guys that are supposed to be banged up, but they're more than likely will play. Derek Johnson, Flowers, that will play in this particular game. I like Kansas. I don't know. It's a good call, a gut pick, call it a reach. I like Kansas City to win outright upset 24-21. Cincinnati, Baltimore. This game jumped out for two reasons. Number one, divisional rivalry. Number two, the point spread. 7 points. Baltimore. They're giving Baltimore 7 points. Folks, the Cincinnati Bengals, to me, are the team to beat in this division. I trust them more than I trust any. I don't know. How can you trust the Cincinnati Bengals? I'll give you two reasons. Andy Dalton and A.J. Green. And an underrated defense. I do not like Baltimore going into the season. I just don't. I don't like them going into this season. I know they're at home. I know they've been great at in Baltimore over the last 2 or 5 years at home. They've been one of the best home teams in the NFL. But 7 points is too many points. I'm sorry. I'll pick Baltimore to win the game, but I'll take Cincinnati with the points, 21-17. Remember, you know, these teams over the last decade, since 2001, have played 22 times. You know what the record is? You know how they split? You know how that's going? 11-11. They split their last 22 games. So that should tell you. And they play every year. So it's not a case where, you know, they met 5 years ago. They're in the same division. They play every year twice. Cincinnati has historically played Baltimore tough. And I think they played them inside a touchdown. I think that 7 points is too much respect for Baltimore. Way too much respect. So I like Baltimore to win. I certainly would not be surprised if Cincinnati were to win this game. Not in the least bit surprised. Go on the road Monday night and win this game. But I'll pick Baltimore. I'll take Baltimore to win and have Cincinnati cover the point spread. Game of the week, as far as I'm concerned, 425 at Lambeau Field, two of the most storied franchises in the NFL. This used to be a great rivalry when, you know, you have Brett Favre and Steve Young battling them in the mid-90s, along with the Cowboys, 49ers, Cowboys, Packers. San Francisco, Green Bay. Green Bay, again, 5.5-point favorites. That's a lot of points. It's a lot of points. But this, to me, this is not about the points. This is about the matchup. Green Bay is able, like New Orleans. Remember, New Orleans put 32 points on the board against San Francisco in that playoff game because they were able to spread them out and Drew Brees went to work. Well, you have somebody better than Drew Brees in terms of Aaron Rodgers, and a bevy of weapons from Green Bay for the Packers. Packers, you know, can spread. You know, they can go 4 or 5 receivers. I know Greg Jennings is not what he once was as far as, and Sean still recovering from the injury, but it doesn't matter. Jordy Nelson is the guy now. You still have Randall Cobb. You still have James Jones. Donald Driver, amazingly, still can play at a high level. I expect a bounce back year from Jermichael Finley. Last year we thought he was going to be a beast, all four caliber season. It did not come to pass. I think he bounces back and has a big year. And, of course, they have the best player in football, in Aaron Rodgers. Very good game. The San Francisco defense will have moments. Question is, can San Francisco score enough points offensively against Green Bay? Can they shorten the game, keep Aaron Rodgers off the field? I'm not sure they can do that. They don't have a dominant offensive line. I think San Francisco will be in this game. I like Green Bay 27-21. And to me, the best game of the week, two teams that have legit chances to go to Super Bowl. Even though I didn't pick Green Bay, Green Bay is certainly capable of any team in the league of winning a championship. It'll be very interesting to see Green Bay's defense with moving Charles Woodson to strong safety. So keep your eyes on that. Morgan Burnett is questionable for this game. Randy Moss makes his San Francisco debut. Can Alex Smith step up? last from a very good year to a Pro Bowl caliber year this year. We'll see. But with that said, I like Green Bay to cover the spread and also win the game. So, four games. I have Baltimore beating Cincinnati, but I'll take Cincinnati with the points. I have Kansas City outright upsetting Atlanta, and I'll take Denver to cover the. I'll take Denver over Pittsburgh in that exciting Sunday night game. So there you go for a week one of NFL picks in the league where no contract is guaranteed. When we return, Mark Malusis will join the program on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. We'll be right back. Forget about a break. We have Mark Malusis right here, right now. How you doing, Mark?
What's going on, Cheryl? How are you, bud?
Not too much, buddy. It's been a couple months since we spoke, and certainly a lot has happened in the baseball world. I'm not even going to give the Mets 10 seconds on my show. That's how poorly they've been over the course of the second half of the season. You know, maybe I can give them 10 seconds. Mark, what has transpired in the All-Star with the Mets?
I'm sorry, Cheryl, you broke up. What has transpired?
Yeah, what do you think happened with the Mets? I mean, they had a good first half. They were competitive. They were fighting. They were scrappy. What happened after the All-Star break? They've been one of the worst teams outside of Houston, probably the worst team in baseball. What happened with the Mets? What do you think? Where did it go wrong?
Well, I don't think they didn't do anything. They didn't make any adjustments to the team, before the trade deadline. They didn't add any pieces, and I think the team just got worn down, And you saw some injuries. I mean, losing Dylan G, then Santana being pitching very, going on the DL, pitching very poorly, then being shut down for the rest of the season. The bullpen at times has struggled. There's lack of offense. Ike Davis finally has woken up in like the last 5 weeks, but he was not the player you thought he was going to be at the start of the year. You found out some answers. I don't think Tolley's an answer at catcher. I'm not sure if Murphy's an answer at second. Lucas Duda looks like a platoon player. New and Ice had some run, but then you saw some holes in his game. So, I mean, the fact of the matter is that I just came down to it. The Mets did not bring in any more talent. I think the guys at the top, on the team started to wear down.
Mark, I don't think coming into the season that there were great expectations for the Mets. But I think the frustrating thing for the Mets fans, and what I've been hearing from, a lot that I've been reading from the New York papers and what have you, is the fact that the team doesn't play smart, number one, and that Terry Collins, number two, has lost the team. Address those two things.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think Collins has lost the team. I really don't. I think he has made some lame excuses after games for bad performances, Cheryl. I don't think there's any question about that. I think maybe he was too apologetic or too easy at times on his team. But I think puts players to a man respect the managerial job that Terry Collins has done this year. I don't think there's any question about it. And I think when you look at the Mets, there weren't great expectations going into the year, but at one point in time, facts are facts. The team was above the 500 mark, six or seven games above the 500 mark, and they were a relevant baseball team. And I think it's easy to say, well, it wasn't our plan for us to win this year. Well, sometimes plans need to change, and I'm not saying to tear apart the farm system or anything like that, but you could have done something to help this team out to prevent another, second-half swoon. And unfortunately, this team didn't die slowly. They died pretty quickly when, they went, during a stretch to, that covered the second half, the start of the second half. They went 2-13 in the span of 15 games, and all of a sudden they went from relevant to irrelevant in the blink of an eye.
Switching on to a team that is relevant, that has also struggled in the second half, but not nowhere near as much, of course. The New York Yankees, I know that was a big win last night, Mark. I watched the game coming off what happened, that disaster on Thursday. And I know it's hard to call it a disaster considering they were down 6-1, but that eighth inning on Thursday was a rough one, to say the least. Are you surprised? Like, the last time we spoke, we were talking, I believe it was around the All-Star break, the Yankees, to me, had like a 5-6 game lead, but were in complete control of the division, considering where Boston was at, considering the injuries that Tampa had, and considering that the fact that we just didn't quite know how long Baltimore could keep this up. They were in complete control of the division and looking like one of the best teams in baseball. To me, I have a turning point on where this season turned. Where is your turning point in terms of what the Yankee season going? Not to the worst, because there's still obviously one game ahead, but to where this thing is a real dogfight in September.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, it is surprising at how well the Orioles have played. Where they've played 14 games over 500 in the last 48 games. The Yankees have been really a below-average baseball team for the better part of the last couple months. I mean, those are facts when you look at it, Cyril. And, it is surprising that the Yankees are where they are. A couple different factors. Number one, you look at the injuries. The guys that they have lost, I'm not making excuses. There are no excuses. There's still enough talent on the team, even with the injuries. But, Teixeira, who should be back in the lineup tonight, Alex Rodriguez, Pettit, Mariano Rivera, Brett Gardner, using the likes of Ibanez and Andrew Jones a little bit too much. Ichiro, now you know why the Yankees got him so cheap from Seattle. He's nowhere close to the player that he once was for a long time with the Mariners up there in the Northwest. But you first look at the injuries, then you look at the way that this team has played. And Soriano's done a nice job, taking over the closer's job for Mariano. The setup guys have been okay. Robertson hasn't been nearly as good as he was last year. You look at the lineup, Robbie Cano has been a very hot, cold, very, very streaky hitter all season long and very inconsistent. I mean, he's still very, very talented, but at times he go through these swoons, which drive you crazy for a guy as gifted as he is. They're way too reliant on the home run at times, and they've been a poor team with hitting with runners in scoring position. So, and the Orioles have played great, and so have Tampa. So, you factor all those things in, and that's why the race is what it is right now with a one-game separation between the Yankees and the second-place team.
Well, I'm glad, Mark, I'm glad you brought that up about the Orioles, because I'm down in the Metro D.C. area, so I see the Orioles and Nationals all the time. They have played great. They have played some excellent baseball, and Buck has instilled a toughness and attitude that was not there before. So they just give, and you've done it already, but to my audience, let's give the Orioles their due. This is not a Yankee collapse, so to speak. It's just, Yankees have been basically, like you said, a 500 team since the All-Star break or somewhere to that extent, and the Orioles haven't. And Tampa Bay is doing what Tampa Bay does in September. That's played great and not give up any runs. That's what they do. But you mentioned the injuries. One injury that sticks out more to me than anything, and people might be surprised by this, that I think has had as much impact as any injury, is the Brett Gardner. Brett Gardner, to me, just gave them a dimension that they just don't have right now in terms of the speed, that feistiness, and just being able to, you can play small ball with Brett Gardner. Talk about that, the impact of that injury.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting, Cyril. When he first got hurt, I didn't think it was going to have that kind of an impact on this team. But you are right. This team is deprived of speed. Jeter's not that guy. At one point in time, he could steal a base here or there, but he's up there in age. Ichiro's no longer that guy. Russell Bart, Ibanez, Jones, Teixeira, Cano, Swin. I mean, they don't really have that guy on that team right now. And Nunez gives them a little bit of speed now coming off the bench after the roster's expanded after September 1st. So, and we've seen Eduardo Nunez before, and you don't question his athletic ability. You question his glove in the field. But I think it's a very fair point as far as the loss of Gardner and the impact that it has had on this team. Now, I'm not going to say that's the reason why they're in a race right now. I think that's a little bit too much because I think there's enough talent on this team. But I think the inability for them to be able to steal a base when they need to put pressure on the opposing pitcher when you have a guy on first that can go out there and get himself in the score position without the help of a base hit. I think that has been a factor all season long. I don't think there's any question about it that the Yankees have missed Gardner all season.
How about the expectations of Andy Pettit moving forward? What are realistic expectations of him once he returns? And is he returning? When is he exactly returning? Is he returning this week or next week?
You know, I haven't seen the exact game plan. I mean, I heard that, you know, a couple weeks ago the game plan was to hopefully get him two starts before the end of the regular season. So, I don't know what to expect from Pettit. I mean, I really don't. You'd think they'll come back and pitch well, certainly. You hope that's the case, but, you know, do I think it'll probably take him a little bit of time? It will, and I don't know if two starts would be enough to get him ready for October baseball if this team sees October baseball.
Right. Moving forward, Mark, sticking with the theme of their starting pitcher, let's assume Pettit gets back. Does this team have enough starting pitching to win a championship?
Cyril, I mean, I don't mean to jump on you there.
Okay.
I don't know if this team is really a legitimate championship caliber team. I really don't. You got questions about Sabathia, and just being realistic, and I'm not trying to be, you know, a negative Nelly, but, you know, you look at where this team is right now. Sabathia has not pitched well in the last two postseasons. You still have yet to answer the question about Soriano in a big-time pressurized spot, one-run game, late coming in, being able to save it when he had the utmost confidence in Mariano Rivera. I'm not saying Mariano Rivera was perfect all the time, but you would want no other closer in the game on the mound than Mo. They haven't been good in situational hitting. They are relying on the home run. I've seen this team, we've all seen this team get shut down by quality starting pitching. You look at it, A-Rod's not the same guy that he once was. Teixeira and Swisher have not been good postseason players at all in a Yankee uniform. I don't know if this team is really set up for October success. And you look at that rotation specifically, you look at Sabathia, you know, it's Kuroda. A big-time question mark in Pettit, not based on what he has done, but based on what he is right now and what he potentially could be, which I really don't know, and how this rotation is going to be set up if they are indeed good enough to be able to get to the World Series and win.
Well, I mean, Mark, you know, and you know as well as I do, if they do get to the postseason, obviously it's going to depend on the matchup, because I'm looking at the landscape of the American League right now. This offensive, other than Tampa Bay, I really don't trust any other team's complete pitching staff. I think from top to bottom, Tampa Bay probably has the best pitching staff in the American League. I know people are in love with the Angels, but Greinke hasn't done anything since he got there, and I still have to see some of those bullpen guys in big spots in the postseason. And Texas has question marks just like the Yankees in terms of not having a legit number one pitcher. So really, I mean, if Tampa Bay doesn't get there, or you don't run into a Detroit with Scherzer and, of course, Verlander, I mean, you know, Yankees can make some noise, but I'm with you. It does get the sense that they're just hanging on. It really does. You don't feel any momentum. Like, they're hanging on by a thread to make the playoffs and to try to win this division. I do get that kind of feel from a distance.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I think I've used the term gasping for air. I think it's fair. And, you know, I saw a great stat. You mentioned about playing well down the stretch, and that's what you want to see. You want to see a team surging. You saw it last year with the St. Louis Cardinals. You saw it with the Yankees. You know, I saw a great stat in the New York Post about a week and a half ago. You know, Yankees in 2009, when they won the World Series, they went 24-11 in their last 35 games. In 2010, when they did not win the World Series, I think they went 9-17 in their last 26. And then last year, they went 10-12 in their last 22 games. It's a matter of going out there and playing quality baseball at the end of the season. I mean, you look around the landscape, look at how well, I don't even know if, and still, there is no guarantee that they're going to make it to the playoffs. Look out west, look at how well the Angels are playing right now. You know, the Angels have ripped off a nice little run for themselves. where, you know, Santana's given them 6 of the last 7 quality starts. You mentioned Frankie has not been great. Yeah, Weaver's a little banged up right now, but, you know, the Angels have put together a nice little stretch for themselves, and, you know, it'll be very, very interesting to see as far as, you know, if they're able to make it to the playoffs. But it's about this Yankee team here in the month of September playing well down the stretch, Cyril, and they have not played well for quite some time. It'll be interesting to see if they can indeed turn it on.
And I'll add one more thing to that, Mark, because I've, you know, really watched this Yankee team from probably real – I really watched them closely for the last, I would say, 16 years going to really when Derek Jeter came. I really paid real close attention to him and been following him from my, you know, my time up in Jersey. They no longer have that respect of where or that aura of where they can struggle down the stretch and just turn it on. I remember the 99 Yankee team that won the World Series was awful. Was awful going. It was either 99 or 2000 where they were awful going down the stretch in September. And it's like, there's no way this team's going to win it. But they knew they had championship pedigree. They knew what it, they had veterans. They had the great pitching in Mariano. You gave them that amount, that you gave them the benefit of the doubt. This team, this group of Yankees, a generation later, does not have that. So your point, I totally agree with your point on playing well down the stretch.
Yeah, you mentioned as far as that championship, I mean, you were talking about the likes of O'Neill and Bernie and Jeter at the time, and obviously, you know, Jeter still has the utmost confidence with the
Chino
Yankees.
Martinez.
But Chino Martinez, you know, they go up and down the line as far as the players at that point in time. But
Brocious.
You know, Posada, Brocious, you're right. You know, this team doesn't have it. There's a lot of empty at-bats. There's a lot of swings and misses. There's a lot of all that stuff. And, you know, there's certain guys that you trust on this team. You certainly trust Jeter. But, I mean, do you trust them like you did the late 90s team? I don't think it's even close. The answer to that is no.
Mark, last thing, you know, regards to the NFL. I know Jets and Giants have already kicked off their season, had a loss to Dallas, thought they were flat. And I'll mention one thing before I get your opinion about on their particular seasons. I did not like the Giants' opening game, a pregame celebration. I hated it. I thought it was, to me, it threw the whole. It's not why they lost, but I didn't like bringing out the trophies. And, you know, it's one thing, and I mentioned this before, it's one thing to have a ring ceremony for an NBA champion. It's 82 games, but NFL, only 16 of these games, they have, you know, 10 times the amount of importance. Give me your thoughts on that before I get your thoughts on the seasons for the Jets and Giants.
Well, you know what, I think you know, listen, I think the Giants celebrate. I thought the pregame show was way too long, the celebration, whatever it might have been. But, you know, the Giants' effort was very poor. And all what was disappointing, Cyril, is they talked about being consistent this year, not being a 9-win team, not having the season come down to the final 60 minutes in a football game, week 17, which it did last year. You know, that's what the Giants talked about. And, you know, they come out in front of a national TV audience and lay an egg. Now, is their season over? No, it's not over by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, I'm not going to overreact. I still have high hopes for the Giants this year as far as winning the NFC East. But all the talk that they gave you, their effort was really not even close to where it needed to be. And, you know, hopefully they use it as a wake-up call and able to get things going here. But it was surprising at how poorly the Giants played.
Yeah, they look flat. I mean, they look flat. How about the Jets? What do you think about? A lot of people are down them coming into the season, the quarterback situation. Maybe the defense isn't quite as good. What are your thoughts on the Jets in 2012?
Yeah, I think the defense is going to be great. I got to be honest with you, I do. I mean, I think you look at Mo Wilkerson, who they drafted at Temple last year. I think they expect big things from him. I love the pick of Copels coming out of Carolina. They're high at Demario Davis. They improved the safety spot with Jeremiah Bell and Laurent Landry. You know, Bart Scott lost about 12, 14 pounds from last year and looks a lot quicker and a lot more athletic. Last year he looked like he was a completely shot linebacker for the Jets, not making plays, being taken off the field in passing situations. So I think the Jets' defense is going to be very, very good. I think it's going to be excellent. The problem I have with the Jets is I don't know exactly what their offense is going to be. They haven't unveiled the Tim Tebow-led Wildcat-type offense at all in the preseason. I don't know how many times they're going to take Sanchez off the field. You don't know what division of Sperano and Rex Ryan are in total. You'll get that feel tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock when they kick off their season out at MetLife Stadium. But I think you look at this Jet team, I think they've got a lot of questions on offense as far as what they're going to be. I think, you know, they want to run the football. They want to go back to what they were before, where they play a lot of low-scoring defensive games, where they limit the quarterback play, and they allow their defense to dictate the style and tempo in which the game is played. I think that's really what the Jets' game plan is. We'll see if it can be successful in today's day and age of the NFL, where the rules have allowed for greater passing, for it to be a greater passing league. So we'll see if the Jets have are going to be successful. I think they're going to contend for a wild card, but I think they're going to be led by that defense.
Yeah, oh, no question about it, Mark. And the bottom line is, you have to, in today's league, the way the rules are set up and the way the league is, and if you look at the last 7 or 8 Super Bowl champions, you have to have a quarterback. I mean, that's where the NFL is at right now. You have to have a quarterback.
Yeah, you do. I don't think there's any question about it. I think I like Sanchez. I do. And I think it shows a lack of faith in the player that they have kind of cut the cord with Sanchez this quickly. And what I mean by that is, you know, they believed in him so much that last year they added all kinds of weapons and skill position guys like a Burris, and they expected that offense to really take off, and it didn't. And now they're so shell-shocked from it that they're going in the complete reverse, where I think at some point in time, if you believe, you have to stay the course, even if you have a rocky year, because at the end of the year, your team and your quarterback's going to be better for it. And I don't think the Jets have put Sanchez in a position to succeed. You know, the offensive line, especially the right tackle, is a major question mark. You know, the skill guys around him, they brought Tebow in, which has been a major distraction. I don't think helps him out as a signal caller at all. They want to take him off the field in certain spots. I think if Sanchez succeeds this year, I think it's going to be in spite of the Jets, not because of the Jets.
That's a great point, Mark, because when you look across the way, across the locker room to their co-tenants in terms of the Giants, they are completely the opposite in terms of how they conduct themselves, not so much off-season noise, and how they handle Eli Manning. Now, Eli Manning has become an elite quarterback, a guy who's probably going to head to the Hall of Fame. It wasn't too long ago that a lot of fans, including me, probably wanted to run him out of New York. Giant franchise was patient with him. No, this is our guy. We'll build around him. He'll get better, so on and so on. We'll address the interceptions. I mean, they can learn a lot from the Giants. They won't admit it publicly, but they absolutely can learn a lot from the Giants in terms of how to conduct and run a professional franchise.
Well, I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, you look at it, you're dead on correct. And it wasn't that long ago where people were knocking Eli, saying he's never going to be as good as his brother. What are they going to win? Inaccurate quarterback, that he needs great players around him in order to be successful. And all that conversation's gone by the wayside because the Giants believed in the player. And they remained firm as far as in determination, you know, in their determination that they were going to prove a lot of people wrong. And they proved all the naysayers wrong. You don't hear any more of that talk. I mean, I bring up a stat a lot. Eli Manning in his third year in the National Football League had 26 turnovers. Mark Sanchez in his third year in the National Football League had 26 turnovers. I mean, you know, I know he's got to take care of the football better, and maybe he didn't show you the great progress that he wanted to see last year, but I also think that they put him behind an offensive line last year that was god-awful, and at the end of the year he was shell-shocked. Even when he wasn't getting pressure, he saw phantom pressure because of the fact of how beat up he got. And that's a knock on the Jets management for not putting him in the best position to succeed.
Mark, as always, it's been great info on the Yankees, Mets, and of course, Jets and Giants. Looking forward to the NFL season. Looking forward to this baseball pennant race, especially in the American League, with how I didn't even get into it on my show, but these possibilities for these tiebreakers in the wild card and divisions can be just crazy if it goes, you know, three-way ties, two-way ties. So definitely looking forward to that. And we'll certainly have you on over the course of the season, especially in the baseball pennant chase.
Yeah, anytime you need me, Cyril. You know that, man. Have yourself a good weekend. Have fun.
Thank you, Mark, and enjoy your football weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it. All right.
Mark Malus is, of course, of WFAN-SNY. WFAN Radio SNY Television does a wonderful job. I've been knowing him for a long time, and can again, he does a tremendous job of breaking down Yankees, Mets, and the New York sports scene in general. John Beckler did a wonderful job with the fantasy. John Beckler the second did a wonderful job with the fantasy stuff for this weekend. I'm looking forward to that as well. I'm already having a dilemma because, you know, Marshawn Lynch probably is going to be out, so I have to find a running back if I don't trust the ones coming off my bench. So we'll see about that. Again, season 5 of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 12:55. It's been a tremendous run here, you know, four-year run as we enter season 5 of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. The callers, the listeners, all the guests have done a wonderful job of making this program what it is. We will, as a program, continue to grow and get better. There's no two ways about it. I will, again, do my best effort to put the best product, as I'm tongue-tied here, the best product on radio. So, best product possible on this radio station. Also, I would thank the people from Blog Talk Radio. I mean, without Blog Talk Radio, we would not have this vehicle to use as radio host and what have you. And Blog Talk Radio allows anything. They allow it is uncensored, so you can talk about anything. They have the variety of shows on their station and on the website, so they give you some nice options. So I remember. You know, as we've grown, the Blog Talk Radio has grown as well. Because I remember, you know, the idea of having to pay for different services it didn't happen. But, you know, the station has grown. We pay for services, certain services that we receive from the station. And listen, it's, you know, they give us our bang for our buck, put to you that way. So some of the services and some of the things that you're allowed to do with Blog Talk Radio. So I'd like to thank those folks for giving me this opportunity to be on the air and to express my opinions about the world of sports and pop culture as well on the Saturday morning, whether it's the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call or whether it's the Cyril Quinn Review. So Mark gave you a lot of stuff to chew on with the Yankees, Jets, and Giants. As far as the Yankees are concerned, they are limping home. I mean, there's no question about it. They're limping home, and they're hanging on for dear life, fighting off a young, feisty Oriole team. I love what Buck Showalter has done with the Orioles. He's giving them energy. He doesn't take anything from the Red Sox or the Yankees. He says, we're going to compete with these teams. We're going to beat these teams. We're not going to bow down because they have, you know, $180, $200 million payrolls. And he makes up no injury excuses. Buck is a no-nonsense guy. I mean, you know this about Buck. Now, can he be overbearing and a little micromanage? Can he micromanage a baseball team? Absolutely. But he's won. Wherever he's going, he's won. He's been successful as far as getting that team to become a playoff caliber team. And I'm convinced, I am absolutely convinced, had he not been fired after that 95 wild card loss to the Seattle Mariners, that he could have won championships with those Yankee teams, just like Doug Collins with the Bulls. Now, maybe they don't win in 4 championships like Joe Torre did, and Joe Torre certainly is a great manager, but Buck would have won a championship. Buck would have won a championship with that New York Yankee team. So, looking forward to this weekend of football. Certainly, again, a quiet weekend of college football, but the NFL weekend, you have some great matchups. Other than the matchups that we talked about with our picks, I mean, how about Andrew Luck in Chicago? That should be very interesting to watch. The Seattle-Arizona game with Russell Wilson. All the rookies. I mean, keep your eye on – you have 5 rookies to quarterback starting. You know, RG3 in his hometown, New Orleans. You have Tannehill with Miami. Russell Wilson with Seattle. Brandon Weeden against the Eagles. Good luck with that and going against that pass rush. I mean, goodness, you might see Colt McCoy by the second quarter. I mean, my goodness. So looking forward to it. And again, thank you for the last 5 years. And I hope you enjoyed this 2-hour edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We will be back NFL show Tuesday, Saturday Morning Wake Up Call next week. So long, enjoy your weekend. I will see you soon.